Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Tristan Nunez, driver of the 7-0 Skyactiv Mazda prototype, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the March 12th edition of Speedway Digest, Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, Michael Mullally and myself will be discussing the FIA Formula E Series and the upcoming Miami E-Prix to be held this weekend in downtown Miami. Tonight will be our first green program, unless, of course, you count the lawnmower racing episode a few episodes ago, and will hopefully shed some more light on the future of motor racing. We're lucky enough to have our first guest this evening, Mr. Jarno Trulli. Jarno Trulli is one of the most experienced Formula One drivers in the history of the sport. He competed in 256 Grand Prix and is third on the all-time list, behind only Rubens Barrichello and Michael Schumacher. The Italian was renowned for his qualifying pace, especially over the one-lap format in the mid-2000s. Trulli began karting as a youngster and went on to win numerous titles, including the European Championship, North American Championship, and three Italian championships. He soon graduated to single-seaters and made an immediate impression securing the German Formula 3 title with the Benetton Junior Team. Trulli earned a drive in the Formula 1 series with Minardi in 1997, before switching to Prost mid-season to replace Olivier Panis. After spells with Prost and Jordan, Trulli enjoyed regular point scoring finishes at Renault, as well as picking up his only Formula 1 win round the streets of Monte Carlo. Following a number of years at Toyota, Trulli moved to Lotus Racing, where he would end his Formula 1 career. Currently, Jarno Trulli competes in the Formula E Series with a teammate this weekend. His teammate has been changed last minute, and we're going to ask about that last change. In about 2 or 3 minutes when he calls in. Again, I'm rather pleased to have the Formula E paddock have been so kind to me tonight. They're going to provide us with three different drivers from three different teams. We also have one of the marketing and sponsorship directors for Venturi Motorsports will be calling in later this evening. For those of you who haven't been to a race in downtown Miami, you're in for quite a treat. I'm sure that some of you have attended the races they held there when they had the Grand Prix of Miami in the downtown circuit. The current Formula E circuit is located very close to where the downtown circuit was, both for IndyCar as well as for IMSA, and later they had another IndyCar race there, the Grand Prix Americas, which was a one-year event. They were anticipating it to be a multi-year event. Unfortunately, it only ended up happening for the 1 year. So it's been several years since the cars have rumbled around the streets of downtown Miami. And this year will be any different, as the Formula E cars are a lot quieter than your average race car. It'll definitely be intriguing to hear what they sound like. I'm looking forward to the event this weekend on Saturday. Formula E is unique in the fact that they do have only a one-day event. They don't spread out over the entire weekend. They have qualifying, they have practice, and they have the race all in one day. It generally makes it easier for the teams to compete on that in that level. It makes it a lot easier for the cities because they don't have to block up a large section of downtown for more than a couple days. And I'm sure it makes it easier for the spectators as well. It's always neat to have a race right outside your door in the downtown area. That is one of the things that started to disappear from sports car racing in the United States as they've moved to more permanent circuits. In the past, they had numerous races all over the downtown areas. As I say, they had the race in downtown Miami. They also had a race in downtown West Palm Beach that was really interesting, and then they moved out to the fairgrounds. That was sort of the step to moving to semi-permanent circuits. Those of you who remember, they also used to have races in downtown New Orleans. They had the race in downtown Washington for a short period of time. So street racing is cool. It definitely changes the layout of the area for a short period of time. It gives you a chance to see how professional drivers are able to negotiate through streets and purpose-built racing machines. In addition to Mr. Yarno Trulli this evening, we're also going to be speaking with Nelson Piquet Jr., who, for the NASCAR fans in my listener base, I know there are quite a few. You'll remember that he competed in the Truck Series. He also did some racing in at that time, the Nationwide, now the Xfinity Series. We're also going to talk to Karun Chandrak, who's the first Indian to be in Formula One. And I'm looking forward to that. It should be quite the conversation this evening. We'd now like to welcome Mr. Yarno Trulli to the program.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me tonight. Thank you for joining me. I'm great to have you on.
Hello,
how are you doing?
Good.
Can you hear me now?
Good. I can hear you very well.
Okay, let me try and clear that up a teeny bit here. First off, what's your favorite aspect of competing in the Formula E Series?
Well, the Formula E Series is a total different series from what we have ever seen before in the motorsport. And it's a great opportunity to show people that we can race properly with electric, full electric cars. And our target is, in fact, to develop these technologies linked to green energy, and in the future having engines which you can drive on a road car. So basically, when I was asked to drive a Formula E car and set up a team, I really took up the opportunity because I strongly believe in the series and in this technology.
The sound of the Formula E cars has been described as rather quiet. How would you describe the sound of Formula E cars? Do they sound like a race car to you?
No, the sound of the Formula E car, it's not at all like a normal racing car. It actually sounds like a jet, a turbine jet. So it's a brand new kind of sound. It's pretty quiet. And it's a perfect racing car to race on the street circuit in the town because it doesn't make, many noises, and people can enjoy watching races and also having a good day off without being stressed by the sound of a normal engine.
What track are you most looking forward to this season?
Sorry?
Which city are you most looking forward to competing in this year?
To be honest, all cities we have been racing so far have been great. Location really, really nice. And people, they all came to watch us. We were full everywhere in every races. And we have a great location like in Argentina or Punta del Este. And as well, Miami is a perfect location, to show off what we are doing. But I'm sure Long Beach is going to be nice as well. So I'm looking forward to go racing everywhere, also not only for racing, but also because I want to see the interest of the people in this brand new series.
How do you feel the track in Miami suits your driving style?
To be honest, the Miami track layout isn't that good to see so far. We didn't test it. I managed to do some laps on the simulator, but it's a very short track, very, very short. And We'll see how challenging it's going to be. I think it's quite bumpy from what I have seen so far. But it's a very short track. So the race is going to be tough because it's going to be hot. And it's going to be long, 40 laps on this track. So there will be a lot of work to do. Regarding the setup and how I like the circuit, well, it's difficult to say at the moment. We only have a chance to test on Saturday morning, a few hours of free practice, then qualifying, and straight into the race at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Do you believe the Formula E will eventually replace Formula One?
No. Formula E has nothing to do with Formula One. Formula E is a series, like I can say, is a Formula One of the electric car. So there are two different series. They compete in two different ways, and in no way Formula One can be replaced by any or other motorsport series. But Formula E represents the best series, racing series, with the electric engine, full electric engine car.
What was it like to win your first Formula One race?
Sorry? When?
What was it like to win your first Formula One race?
Well, my first Formula One race was in Australia a long time ago. And obviously that was very exciting because it's, you know, it's the peak of the motorsport and is a target for any of the drivers. Formula E is a different way of racing. And after many years in F1, now racing in a Formula in a full electric car, it's a totally different way. It's a completely different challenge. I'm enjoying it, but as well, I'm learning a lot from it.
What forms of racing do you particularly follow yourself?
Sorry?
What forms of racing do you follow yourself?
What?
Yeah, what's the type of racing that you're the biggest fan of?
To be honest, I'm a fan of every kind of racing. I watch from every kind of motorsport, from, I don't know, NASCAR as well, IndyCar, Formula One, MotoGP. I don't like very much races like Le Mans or the 24 Hours, things like that. I prefer more races, sprint races, circuit, track, these sort of things. I really enjoyed the NASCAR when I get the chance to watch it. I also drove the NASCAR car, and I think it's very challenging when you are in the middle of the group racing around the corner. So I think every race has got its own challenge, and you need to deal with this kind of challenge. No matter if you drive a Formula One car or NASCAR or IndyCar or a Formula E series, you know, it's always a different challenge, and you have to deal with that.
What's the most challenging track you've ever driven on?
So far, I believe that in F1, the Spa-Francorchamps track in Belgium is definitely the most beautiful and challenging, as well as Malaysia and Suzuka in Japan. These circuits are really, really challenging and demanding, both physically, mentally, but also technically.
I know for this weekend you've announced a new teammate for your Formula E team. What can you tell us about being your new teammate for this weekend?
Well, obviously we got this call very late, as we have been noticed very late. So with Antonio Liuzzi, another ex Formula One driver, Italian, is joining me for this weekend race. I'm pleased because he obviously has a long experience in motorsport. He's been a professional Formula One driver, so I'm sure he can help me in order to move on with the team. And I hope for the future that we can give him a chance.
I know that the Formula E races have a thing called Fan Boost. Can you explain a little bit more about that and why the people should vote for you to have the Fan Boost for the race in Miami?
Well, the Fan Boost is a way to basically bring people closer to the teams, the drivers, and as well the series. And what they basically do is they ask people to vote each preferred driver and team in order to follow as well the series. And having a Fan Boost is just like having a little bonus, as you have a chance to use a little bit more power for 5 seconds during the race, and eventually this might help the driver in an overtaking maneuver. This is the main target, technically.
I know that the cars, you have a pit stop about halfway through the race to change cars. How do you like that? Do you think that's an interesting way of changing up the race a little bit?
Well, it's always a challenge because every time you stop, you might encounter some problems. So far, we've been dealing pretty well with it. But obviously, changing a car is something new for everyone. So far, we've been dealing well with it, but it might easily go wrong and lose the race, as it's already happened to other teams and drivers. It's not a way, let's say, to gain a position if everyone does it properly, because no one can go any quicker. We have a minimum time to respect. But as I say, it's a good way to waste your race in case you make some mistake. So it's something that we need to do because obviously each driver needs to race with both cars in order to finish the race. So it's something that the teams and drivers analyze pretty well and try to as well exercise over the weekend in order to not commit any mistakes.
I know there's been some problems with the suspension failures in some of the previous races, and this weekend they've changed the suspension layup for the cars. Do you think that'll help, especially with the fact that it's a bumpier track in Miami?
Yeah, I think so. We've had some troubles with the suspension so far from the beginning of the season, and the fact that we also race at the street circuit, it doesn't help because street circuits are very bumpy. So we hope that with the new suspension we can fix this problem.
Well, I wish you lots of luck this weekend. I look forward to the race. It should be a really good event, and hopefully you have a really good finish.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Have a nice evening. Once again, we'd like to thank Jarno Trulli for taking time out of his busy schedule to talk with us this evening and wish him lots of luck in the world of Formula E. We've got a little while before our second guest, but our second guest representing the Formula E paddock this evening is Nelson Piquet Jr. He started his career in South American karting and soon switched to car racing with immediate success in South American F3. A move to Europe followed, where he took top honors in the British F3 Championship in 2004. The Brazilian graduated to GP2 in 2005, finishing as runner-up in the series in 2006 after a season-long battle with Lewis Hamilton. Piquet Jr. graduated to a race car seat in F1 for the 2008 alongside Fernando Alonso, where his performances, including a second-place podium in the German Grand Prix, helped the team secure fourth position in the Constructors' Championship. He continued with the team into 2009. From 2010, Nelson began to pursue a career in the USA in NASCAR. He became the first Brazilian to win a top-tier NASCAR race by visiting Victory Lane at Road America in the NASCAR Nationwide Series in 2012, and further took victories in the NASCAR Truck Series. In 2014, he took a full-time ride in the Red Bull Global Rallycross Championship, impressing with 4 podiums in his first season, and was announced for the inaugural 2014-2015 season of the FIA Formula E Championship. This saw his return to single-seater competition, in which he had not competed since 2009, and he has already scored 2 podiums in the past 4 races. Nelson Piquet will be joining us shortly. As I said, for the NASCAR fans, you'll be happy to hear from Nelson Piquet Jr. And I was also surprised to hear that Yarno truly had competed in a few NASCAR events. That's also in a little bit of trivia for those of you who are interested in that sort of thing. I have to look up and see what race Yarno truly competed in. I know that in the past they brought in some road course ringers and that sort of thing. NASCAR, they got in trouble for that. Some teams thought it was unfair. And they're starting to move away from that now, but there's still some teams that bring in the road course ringer type people for the events. And I think that's, in some ways, it makes it a more interesting race, more exciting, brings in different specialists into the series. As Yarno truly stated, it is a one-day event there in Miami. There hasn't been any testing as of yet. They don't have any practice there until Saturday morning, where they practice, then they qualify, and then they have the race at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They also have support races. And it'll definitely be a full day of racing. I believe the first cars take to the track at 8 o'clock in the morning. And so anybody who's in South Florida, anybody who's just interested in spending the weekend in Miami, Saturday anyway, I'd highly recommend it. They still do have lots of general admission tickets available at a cost of just under $25 for the day. They have, I believe, sold out of their grandstand seats, but I'm not positive about that. Check the Ticketmaster website for that information. As Yarno truly also stated, it is a rather short track. They do have it's dominated by the American Airlines Arena there in downtown Miami. They also travel down Biscayne Boulevard. Their top speed is just over 200 kilometers per hour. So they're not the fastest machines in the racing, but they're definitely quick enough. There is plenty of parking available in downtown Miami. However, I would advise, personally, if you're able, to take the advantage of public transportation to avoid the parking fees that will be, no doubt, a little bit higher than most people are prepared to pay. Tri-Rail offers full train service on the weekends. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Tri-Rail is the local train service that covers both Palm Beach, Broward, and Upper Dade County, Miami-Dade County. It also connects directly into the Metro Rail service, which connects into the Metro Mover. There are Metro Mover stops that are close by to where the on-track activity will be taking place, right there near the American Airlines Arena. And the Bayside Marketplace. For those of you who haven't gone, the Bayside Marketplace will be a hopping place, I can guarantee it, on Saturday, with all the restaurants and clubs going insane there around the racing circuit. As I stated, it has been a long time since they were raced in downtown Miami, but I'm certain that the city is looking forward to it, and they've done some preparations. They've probably done some paving work, as Your Honor truly said, the track has the reputation of being a rather bumpy track. His simulator has shown that. I do remember in the past when they had the IndyCar race there in downtown, it was notorious for being bumpy. It also had a reputation for bagging water when there was a rainstorm. Hopefully they won't have to deal with that this weekend, but there is a chance of rain. There's always a chance of rain in southern Florida, especially in Miami. And it'll be interesting to see how the electric cars tackle the chance of a stray shower. It looks like from looking at the schedule of the event, there is a large general admission area where they have the a number of vendors and displays there. So there'll be lots of stuff for fans to take advantage of. And it should be a rather good event. Are you planning on watching the Formula E event on Fox this weekend? I think it's on Fox Sports, either Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports 2. I'm not sure which one.
I am, actually, if I can find it.
I know there's information somewhere. I haven't actually looked into it very much because I am planning on going down to the race. I've been looking into parking and all sorts of things. And as I was just telling the listeners here, I'm planning on actually taking public transportation to get down there because it's a lot cheaper and more reliable than trying to find a parking lot, which may or may not be the most secure thing in the universe, especially in downtown Miami. And it's good because Miami has a really good public transportation system. They have the Metro Rail, which is like a monorail that services most of the city. They have Metro Mover, which is an elevated, almost like an elevated bus service that services the downtown area, and that's about where they're going to have the race right there near the American Airlines Arena where the Miami Heat play. It's been a long time since I've been on that system, but it's a really convenient way of getting around downtown Miami.
Yeah, and I bet, well, judging by, like, the reality TV shows I watch, there's a lot of traffic, too, so you won't have to deal with that.
Yeah, just have to deal with getting up a little earlier in the morning than I'm accustomed to on the weekends. But that's the penalty of being a race fan, you know.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
But I think getting up at... It's actually only about 20 or 30 minutes earlier than you have during the week, so it shouldn't be too bad. And just take the train down. It's about an hour and a half from here down to Miami by train. And then you catch the Metro Mover and get down there in time to pick up my credentials at the credentials office and then go enjoy the race.
Wow, sounds like you've got it all figured out.
Hopefully. Got my fingers crossed that it all works out. As I was just saying, there is a chance of rain a little bit on Saturday. There's always a chance of rain this time of year. But I hope it stays clear of that. I don't know how well electric cars and rain do, especially the fairly new electric racing cars. But you never know. I'm sure they've got a contingency plan for that as well.
Yeah, that definitely should be interesting.
Now, Yarno truly said that the track is bumpy. I remember that from when they had the IndyCars. A lot of the IndyCar drivers would complain about the fact that the track basically gave them a headache from how bumpy it was. And driving the streets of downtown Miami in a normal car is bad enough. I can't imagine driving in a car with a rather stiff suspension where it's just you and traveling only a couple inches off the ground. Little nerve-rattling, I'd think.
Yeah, especially if it's really bumpy, then you're going to have a problem.
Yeah, I'm sure most of all the drivers are pretty much the Formula One veterans. They know how it is to drive on bumpy city streets at speeds that are a little bit quicker than the ones the Formula E cars go over. But it'll definitely get their attention, I'm pretty sure of that. Hopefully they filled in the big potholes anyway.
I've always wondered how you would fix bumps on the track. Would you, like, cut the bump out and then put new cement in it or something?
I think that's what they used to do when they had the track there in downtown Miami. They actually had big cement patches in the corners.
I guess that would make sense. How come they don't do that then?
I think they do, but it really depends on the transition between the asphalt and the concrete in a relatively stiffly sprung car is probably a pretty big bump.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And like I was just saying, the suspension on the cars, the Formula E cars, has been a problem in the first four races of the season. So it should be interesting to see if they got that problem fixed. I know they just came out with a new suspension package for this weekend's race. Hopefully they're able to get that problem fixed. Otherwise, there'll be a few cautions and a few cars sitting on and three wheels bumping against the walls like they were in the first four races. Wouldn't be the best way.
I wonder, do all of the teams have to supply their own stuff, or is there like because I know with like the Legend cars, they have a big parts truck that if someone needs something, they can just go buy it off of that truck. But I wonder, do they do that kind of stuff?
I think with the Formula E series, all the cars are the same. They're all Spark Renault cars. They're all the same chassis, all the same engine. And I'm pretty sure that the teams don't even really touch the cars unless there's a problem. All prepared by the same group. Next season, that's going to be different. Next season, they've got either 8 or 10 different manufacturers, including the Venturi Motorsports, who'll be the guy. He'll be our last guy on the program this evening. So it'll be a little bit different next year. But this year, they're all the same car.
I don't know. That's different.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the first season they've had the electric cars, and I think they were trying to get the series going with the lowest amount of cost and the quickest amount of time. And so they came up with the Spark Renault to be their first year car. As I said, next year they've got at least 8, I think maybe 10 manufacturers, so with different engines and a little bit different way of doing things. I'm pretty sure all the cars will look very, very similar to this year, but it'll be a little different. Won't be as different as the Indy cars, but it'll be a little different.
Oh, so what you're saying is these cars this season are like the same manufacturers and everything.
Yep.
They're all the same.
Exactly.
Oh,
the same.
Okay. I understand now.
10 different teams with 2 drivers per team. Each team has 4 cars, and in order to get points, they have to drive. Each driver has to have the car change halfway through the race and go from one car to the other.
So how long are the races?
This race this weekend is 40 laps, and I think that's probably about what their average is. About an hour.
Yeah, that's probably so they can not have to recharge their battery.
Yep, that's what the main idea was. That they just have, because the cars are going in excess of 220 kilometers per hour, but a little over 100 miles an hour, and they're right at the edge of the battery effectiveness, so they stop the car and they have a fresh battery for the end of the race.
Mm. That was really sounding interesting.
And as Yarno truly said a few minutes ago, it's not a way to gain an advantage, because they all have basically the same amount of time to go from one car to the other, but it's a way to really screw up your race if you have a problem and you get into the car and then you immediately either break something or you don't hit your marks exactly right, and it can really throw off the whole pace of the race.
So like extreme pit stops.
That's what it seems like, yeah. And they're extreme teams too. I'm pretty sure they're very similar to the Formula One teams. And they've got a huge team. They travel. They know everything that's going on in the car as the person's driving around in the car, and they can tell them exactly where they've got a problem, exactly what they're doing wrong, and how they think they can fix it from inside the car.
Mm-hmm.
technologically advanced. But not as advanced as it could be.
Sorry?
Not quite as advanced as it could be. So I think if they, maybe next year they'll have increased the battery power enough that they'll actually just have the one car. But you never know.
Yeah. Maybe NASCAR will try this one day.
They could, I suppose. They bring out the Chevy Volt and the Nissan Leaf and a few other electric cars that are made in this country, and you never know. Could have something going.
This could be like reinventing racing.
That's what their plan is. Yeah, they're trying to showcase the future of automotive technology.
Well, I think it's a good idea. Like, the battery-powered cars or electric-powered cars. I think that's a really good idea.
I think it is, too. I think it'll be different to hear them because they, as the pretty much everybody has said, they're sort of like a really quiet jet plane going down the road. So it'll definitely be a lot different than hearing the NASCAR cars, hearing the IMSA cars, heck, hearing the Indy cars that have a distinctive rumble to them. These cars sound like a super-powered vacuum cleaner going down the street. So. But in the past, I think that was part of the issue with IMSA and those sort of things where they had to run the huge mufflers because they were too loud to go down city streets. So.
Yeah.
So who's your pick to win the Formula E race this weekend?
I'm going to be honest. I really don't know a lot of the drivers. So
okay.
I'm going to have to pick the next.
Yeah. I'm not sure who has the advantage either. I know that Andretti Autosport, because they have the experience in the downtown circuits in IndyCar, might have a little bit of an advantage. But then there's teams like Virgin with Richard Branson and his huge piles of money that might be able to do better too. They've got Sam Bird and Jaime Alguersuari racing for them. Then you can't really rule out Nelson Piquet Jr. either, or even Yarno Trulli, or even Karen Jandok for that matter, has a chance to win. I think any of the 20 drivers has a chance to win, but it's just a matter of who hits the corners the right way and whose suspension holds up well. It'll be interesting to see. It should be a really good race. I'm looking forward to it. Something a little different.
Yeah. Well, just by this little conversation we just had, I gotta say, I'm gonna try extra hard to find it this weekend.
Like I said, I'm sure it's on. It's being covered by Fox Sports. It might even be on Velocity because I know that the Discovery Communications recently invested a lot of money. They actually bought into the series. I think they bought like 20% of the racing series itself. So it'll definitely be on your television somewhere. You just have to look for it and see.
Yeah. How do you think the ratings are going to do?
It's competing against an awful lot of stuff this weekend. They've got the race, the NASCAR race on Sunday. They also have the Saturday NASCAR race, of course, the Xfinity race. There's the NHRA event there at the Gator Nationals, and there's several other races they're on this weekend as well. They also have the IHRA event from Baton Rouge, which we're going to discuss in 2 weeks, which they don't really have a big TV package or anything for that. But you never know. I think it'll do okay, but most of the people who watch who are fans of Formula E are people who are who are looking for it, people who want to see it, people who are interested in it. And it draws its own fan base, and I don't think that it's exactly the highest rated form of motorsports on the television dial, but it's growing. This is only their first year.
Yeah. I think the ratings will kind of do fair just because people might look at it as something new, so they'll watch it just to kind of try it out.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're hoping too, and it's also it's something that's close by. They have races all over the world, and it attracts they're trying to attract a younger demographic because they have the increased social media presence where you can look up the information on FIA Formula E. Their hashtag is Drive the Future, if you're interested in that. They also have the Miami E-Prix, which is what they're calling it, has a rather large Twitter presence. So there's and they've got the fan boost thing, which is interesting, where you can go and actually vote for who you think should get a 5-second boost of power into their car. You vote on that online, and they give the 5 seconds of extra power to one of the teams in the one of the guys who's driving in the race, which is pretty neat. So.
Yeah, so essentially the extra power is kind of like the lucky dog in NASCAR. Well, sort of.
Well, sort of. It's more like the push-to-pass thing that they have in IndyCar, where you get an extra, like a turbo boost button or whatever you can hit, and then they pass them on the in the corners or one of the straights or something.
I didn't know IndyCar did that.
Mm-hmm.
Do they vote in IndyCar too?
No, IndyCar. You just have a certain amount. It's I think they have like 4 or 5, and they monitor it. And you can, as you're watching the race, you can see how many push to pass things left they have left, and whether they've used them or not. And it's kind of a different thing. I don't think it's the best thing for IndyCar. Because it's just a little odd. But in a way, it's kind of like they have in Global Rallycross, which we can ask Nelson Piquet Jr. a little bit about as well. They have a shorter way around the track where you can take that one lap to sort of give yourself the advantage as well. And it's just a different way of building, I suppose, building drama into the race.
Cool, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a couple more minutes, Nelson Piquet Jr. should be joining us in the on the program. He's currently staying in Miami, and he's going to be calling in within the next couple moments. Hopefully, fingers crossed. As I stated, for those of you who are interested, we're going to be taking next week off for a sort of a spring break type thing. But the following week, the 26th, we're going to have Miss Nitrodram back on the show to discuss the IHRA event from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We've also got a couple other drag racers who are going to be on the program. And it should be another interesting Thursday night Nitro program, our second edition of that particular moniker. For those of you who are interested, this weekend it will be the Gator Nationals up there in Gainesville in the NHRA. I think that it might take a little bit away from the Formula E race here in Miami, but the people in the state of Florida, the people who schedule the races, never really think about other races in other parts of the state. And they just sort of try and slam as much as they can into the spring. And that's just the nature of racing in the great state of Florida.
I think it would be kind of cool if, and I had this thought one night, I was sitting there and I was just thinking, and I think it would be kind of cool if like NHRA, NASCAR, Formula E, they all race like in the same, not like the same state, but like Seattle, for instance, you know, just like one weekend and you charge like a package deal for like all four races, you know, just like one time out of the year. I don't know. I think that would be kind of cool.
I know in the, with racing like that, they've had some race weekends. They try and squeeze as much racing as they can into one weekend. They have a bunch of different series that show up and that sort of thing. And the IndyCar is really good about that because they have the IndyCar race, then they have the Pirelli World Challenge, and they have the for most of the events they have the Robbie Gordon Stadium Super Truck Series that travels with them. So it's always a good thing when you have more than one event going on. I think in the case of NASCAR, for example, a lot of their weekends, you've got the one race one day. And if people are going to spend the sort of money they spend on racing, they want to be entertained. They want more stuff to see than just one race and wander around the pit area all day. And as I said, the IndyCar people have it really good. I'm sure that the Formula E people who have the full day of events from 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night, that'll be a good race as well. But they just need to, the promoters need to try and entertain the people, and realize that these people are spending their hard-earned money to go and see racing, and they want to see racing. They don't just want to sit there all day and then have one race and that's it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Yeah. And I don't think it would be like as big of a deal maybe if like it didn't, you know, like you just said, if it didn't cost as much for one race. But they're pretty spendy.
They are. As I stated earlier, for the race this weekend, the FIA Formula E race in Miami, the cost for general admission is only $25, which is a pretty good deal for the full day of racing. I know that the cost for grandstand seats was a heck of a lot more than $25, but the grandstand seats, at least the last time I checked, were already sold out. So in Miami, though, I think they've got some of the stuff they're trying to attract is sort of the reality show type culture. They've got as much of a fashion show and a bar scene as they do the race. And that's fine for certain people, but I think for a lot of the people who are going to see the race, they're there to see the race. And that's what the general admission thing will be interesting to see how that's like.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, it all works out in this Formula E series becomes pretty popular.
I'm hoping so too. I think it'll be as I said a few times, it should be a really good race there. They've had lots of successful races in downtown Miami in the past, and it'll be a good thing to have the racing back downtown again. I mean, Homestead Miami Speedway is a great track. It's an amazing facility, but it is pretty much the middle of nowhere. You go 30 minutes past the edge of Miami and then you're pretty much almost kind of there to Homestead. So with Miami, you're downtown, you're right at the end of 95, you're at the within walking distance of all sorts of restaurants downtown. The bay is right there, and it'll be it's a much better venue for people who are interested in racing and then going maybe out to dinner or whatever. If you're going out to dinner at Homestead, you're going to some little restaurant on the edge of the turnpike or in the edge of the Everglades. But if you go to dinner in downtown Miami, you get all sorts of options. And that's kind of the idea for having the racing in downtown areas.
Yeah, So are there a lot of tracks in the state of Florida?
Yes, an awful lot, but it's not as many as there used to be. The big tracks, you've got the Homestead there, the Homestead Miami Speedway, you've got Daytona International Speedway. Smaller tracks, there's several smaller tracks, but not as many as there used to be. There used to be a big track in Hialeah, which is no longer there. There used to be a really big track in Lakeland, the USA International Speedway, which is also no longer there. So it's sort of an up and down thing. But as I've stated on this program before, there are a lot of teams that like to base their operations in the state of Florida because it's warmer here, and they've got all different places they can test, where they can go test it at Homestead, or they can test at PBIR there. Or if they want to, they can test it at the Walt Disney World Speedway, which is there for at least a few more months. Rumors are circulating quite a bit that the Walt Disney World Speedway its days are numbered, and they're going to remove that in early summer. But you never know. So racing is an interesting business, and maintaining tracks that don't necessarily have many events at them and only have the one big event, and the rest of the year they're basically sitting fallow, isn't the best business plan. So there's been a lot of racetracks in the state and a lot of racetracks around the country that found that over the years.
Have you been to the majority of the racetracks in Florida?
I've been to quite a few. I've been down to Homestead more than a few times, up Daytona several times. I go out to PBR at least three or four times a year. Been to Gainesville four or five times, I think. Been to Sebring a few times. I've never been to any of the tracks near Tampa. They do have the Orlando Speed World, which is also around. They've got New Smyrna Speedway, which I've been to for a few races. I've never been to the Bubba Raceway Park. Haven't been to East Bay Raceway. But those racetracks are expanding as well because of the increase in the sprint car series recently. And especially in the spring, they've got all the big sprint car events with the World of Outlaws and those sort of things. That's huge in the Tampa and Orlando, Ocala area. As long as the weather cooperates, and sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. But for the most part, the weather's pretty nice over there, right?
Pretty much, yeah. As long as it doesn't rain. And that's what they have the problems with at the dirt tracks, especially. When they had all the rain in the beginning of the year, they lost quite a few race days at East Bay and at the Bubba Raceway Park there in Ocala.
When it rains over there, does it rain a lot?
Most of the time, yes. Rains an awful lot. But that's Florida, though. It either gets really, really dry or it gets really, really rainy. And there's really not much in between. As I stated before, we're still standing by for Nelson Piquet Jr. We're going to give him about another 5 or 10 minutes before we move on to our next guest. Hopefully he'll be able to call in this evening. Got my fingers crossed still. If not, there's always a plan B. I do have the next guest after Nelson Piquet Jr. is a guest who I actually have to press the little direct connect button and call him up on his phone, so I'm pretty sure that he will actually answer the phone. Again, fingers crossed.
Have Have you ever had someone not answer?
Not yet, no. But you never know. The only problem I've had before was one time we were supposed to have Jack Baldwin, the sports car racer, on the program, but he ended up getting distracted in his garage working on his race car and wasn't able to call in. So, gave him a pass, though we got back next week. So. Once again, for anybody who's interested, this weekend they do have the race at the Formula E race in downtown Miami called the Miami E Prix. It'll be taking place at the Green Flag. It's scheduled for shortly after 4 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. The first on-track activity takes place at 8 o'clock in the morning. They've got practice, then they've got qualifying, then they have two support races. Should be a good full day of activity there in downtown Miami.
Wait a minute. Did you say the Formula E race is on Saturday?
Saturday afternoon, yep. 4 o'clock p.m.
Oh, man. Maybe I'll be over there.
I think that all they want to try and get done. All the races are on Saturday for them. It's survey because they can close down the streets on Friday. Saturday they have the race, and by Sunday late night they're able to reopen the streets in downtown again for traffic. So all you have is the streets basically blocked for just under 3 days.
So they literally close down the streets to these events.
Yep.
So they kind of like create their own track, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, I thought it was on a actual track.
Nope, it's on city streets. At the one in Miami, it looks like it's on Biscayne Boulevard, and then it's also on the whatever the name of the perimeter road is that goes around the American Airlines Arena. That's where I think turns 5, 6, 7, 8 are around the thing there.
Hmm. Well, that's even better.
Then you have a view of the Port of Miami, the Dodge Island, and the cruise ships will be in the background. It'll be a really picturesque track there.
That actually sounds pretty.
It should be. I'll take lots of pictures. It should be pretty good. And with that, it doesn't look like we'll be able to talk to Nelson Piquet Jr. this evening unless he calls in roughly 20 minutes. You never know. But right now, we'll move on to our next guest. Our next guest this evening is Karen Chantok, who is one of only two ex-Indian Formula One drivers. A multiple race winner and podium finisher in GP2, Karen was a test driver for Red Bull Racing in 2007 and 2008, before going on to race for HRT and Team Lotus in 2010 and 2011. For the past 2 years, he's been competing in sports cars, finishing second in the privateer class at Le Mans in 2012 and sixth in LMP2 in 2013. Karen has also been racing in the FIA GT Series. Karen was born into a motor racing family, where his father, grandfather, and even grandmother used to race. After winning the Indian National Championship on his debut in 2000, he won the Formula Asia Championship in 2001, before moving to Europe and Formula 3. Karen came back to Asia and won the Asian Renault V6 Series in 2006, which served as a launch pad up to GP2 and then Formula 1.
Outside the car, Karen has built up quite a name for himself as a commentator and broadcast analyst for motorsports. He was a main commentator on the Formula One broadcast for Star Sports in Asia, as well as BBC Radio 5 live in the UK for a number of years before joining the team at Sky Sports F1 in the UK. He also conducts two major charity events every year to raise funds for the education of underprivileged children in India. The current Karen Parting Carnival in the summer in the UK and the KC 500, a 500-kilometer cycling event in South India.
Now we're going to press the little button and try and contact Mr. Karen Chandrak.
Hello.
Hello, this is Adam Sinclair with the Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder.
Yeah, hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good, how are you?
I'm good, really good. Happy to be here in Florida.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for coming on the program this evening.
No problem.
First off, what's the most important aspect of bringing Formula E to the United States?
Well, I think it's always nice to, you know, visit different countries with Formula E. Obviously, something completely new and different in many parts of the world, but not so much in the States. You know, you guys have had IndyCar and stuff racing on the streets for many years here. But, you know, I think it's not often that you have a race running around in downtown Miami. So I think hopefully we can put on a good show.
Yeah, I think you can too. It should be should be an awesome event. I know it's been more than a few years since they've had a race in downtown Miami.
Yeah, exactly. And also, obviously, it's completely new technology. It's totally different from, you know, the big gas-guzzling NASCARs that people are used to seeing in this part of the world. You know, fully electric, battery-powered cars, something totally new and different. And, you know, the technology on it is pretty amazing if you think how far and how fast we're able to go with these things, considering they have no engines. So it's actually very cool.
What's the main thing that attracted you to the Formula E series?
I think it was the chance to get involved with something new and different. You know, as a racing driver, you're always trying to, you know, have a bit of diversity in your career. And Formula E is about as different as you can get. I think also the chance to race on street circuits, I really enjoy that. If you know, I've been racing in Europe and the rest of the world for quite some time now, and, you know, we don't get the opportunity to do many street circuits out there anymore. And Formula E, obviously, we go to 10 different cities, all on city streets. I thought that was a really, really cool idea. So, yeah, I think those were kind of the two things, really.
What are some of the implications an electric series has in terms of developing new technology?
Well, I think that is really the focus of the championship or the series on the whole is to highlight, you know, how electric cars work. B, obviously, there's the environmental side of things. And I think fundamentally, you know, the world of electric cars is still obviously a long, long way behind the normal sort of internal combustion engine. And hopefully if you've got 10 teams who are, you know, focusing a lot of time and money and effort into researching how we can get these cars being faster but also more efficient, you know, one day, hopefully in the next 2 or 3 years, we'll transfer the technology back to road cars, which, you know, you can buy in a dealership. You know, I race with a team called Mahindra Racing. It's an Indian company. And we've also got an Indian electric car company. You know, Mahindra produce electric cars. So in the next year or two, we've already started a race-to-road program. And in the next year or two, we'll really be moving actual bits and pieces from the race cars onto our road car production line.
I know that next season there'll be more than one manufacturer in the series.
Yes.
Is Mahindra one of the teams? That's
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. For the reason I just said, you know, Mahindra's come into the championship very much to be a constructor and develop stuff to put on our road cars.
What are the main differences that stand the Formula E series apart from other racing series?
Well, obviously we have no engine. It's the first thing that's completely different. You know, beyond that, obviously, we only race on city streets. So again, that's something that's totally different from people who race on road courses or ovals. I think the fact that Formula E is bringing the races to the people rather than forcing people to, you know, go out to find a racetrack outside the city, I think is something very unique. There's a lot more sort of fan interaction on, you know, by using this system called Fan Boost, which allows the fans to directly vote for three drivers to get a bit more power in the race. Hopefully they're all listening and going to vote for me. And I think, you know, so you really try and get the fans to engage in the sport and get involved in a very direct way.
I'd now like to turn the floor over to Michael Mullally, my co-host, who has a couple of questions for you as well.
All right.
What are some other, what are some things that have shaped your career into what it is today?
I think for me, obviously coming from a country like India, you know, motorsport is not very well known, and you know, it was a big, big uphill task to sort of climb the ladder of motorsport. And I think that a lot of sort of steps along the way toughen you up as a character. You know, I would, in 15 years ago when I started, I would meet journalists and sponsors and stuff, and they wouldn't know the difference between a go-kart and a Formula One car. They didn't know what was IndyCar. They didn't know what was Formula One. And so it was a tough job to try and educate people out there first and then work my way up. So, yeah, but for me, of course, you know, being one of only two Indian F1 drivers is something very special and something very proud of.
What other types of racing have you participated in?
I've raced in Formula 3 and GP2 in Europe, in Formula 1 in 2010 and 11. I've been to Le Mans, the Le Mans 24 Hours, and I've done a lot of sports car racing. I did the Sebring 12 Hours race here in Florida in 2012 and really enjoyed that. So, at the moment, you know, carrying on my career in sports car racing alongside Formula E.
So of all the racing that you have participated in, which sounds like a lot, what would you say has probably been your favorite?
It's like asking someone to pick their favorite child, I think. It's difficult to pick. I think, obviously racing in Formula One is very special in terms of the cars. You know, the cars are just incredible. But the politics and the stuff that happens behind the scenes is quite exhausting, I think. And I loved doing Le Mans. I think that Le Mans 24-hour race that happens in France is just magical. I think it's just an absolutely amazing race. But I'd love to do the Indy 500 one day as well. I think I really like racing in America. I really liked doing Sebring, and here in Miami is only my second time racing in America, but I hope one day I get the chance to do the Indy 500 as well.
So, of all the different types of racing, which do you tend to follow more?
I follow everything. It drives my wife mad because my TV on a weekend is just nonstop on different types of racing. But I even love watching motorbike. I love watching MotoGP. Formula One is what I grew up watching. You know, Formula One is what attracted me to be a racing driver and was always my dream when I was a child. So, you know, that's something I still watch very much. But I watch all the IndyCar races. I watch some of the NASCAR stuff. But obviously when I live in India or live in England, it happens in the middle of the night, so it's a little bit difficult. I will watch anything on four wheels.
So which do you prefer, road course racing, oval racing, city racing, which is new to me, but all kinds of racing, which do you prefer?
I like city races. I think doing races on city streets are really cool. You know, you really feel the energy of the people close by, and I think you really enjoy the chance to do a race on the city streets. I think it's really special.
You mentioned the fan boost briefly. Can you explain a little bit more about that for the listeners who aren't familiar with that at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Formula E allows a voting system where the fans can vote for three drivers to get an extra 10 seconds of power in the race. So basically, during the race, we have 150 kilowatts of power, but for those 10 seconds, you'll get an extra 20% of power, which can really make a difference for a guy to overtake, some cars around you, especially on a small street circuit. So, people just go to the Formula E website and vote online, pick your favorite driver, or pick any driver you feel deserves a fan boost, and vote for them.
I know you mentioned you've raced in the U.S. a couple times. What's your favorite track to race at in the United States?
Well, I've only actually been to Sebring, so this weekend in Miami will be my second time here, and I really enjoyed Sebring. I'd love to do Laguna Seca in California, and I'd love to do Watkins Glen as well. I think Watkins Glen has got a lot of history, in American racing, and I'd love to go there one day, as well as of course Indy 500. I think Indianapolis is one of the three big races in the world. Monaco Grand Prix, Le Mans 24 Hours, and the Indy 500. That's your three sort of big blue ribbon events. And I've done the other two, so the Indy one's missing from my CV at the moment.
There you go. Maybe you should talk to Andretti Autosport while you're in Miami and see if Michael Andretti has an extra seat available for the Indy 500.
Yeah, maybe.
I know you mentioned that you race in Sebring. Do you have any interest in racing at the 24 Hours of Daytona at any time in the future?
Yeah, I'd love to. I've had a few friends, actually, who did the race this year, and they really enjoyed it. I think it would be really nice to do that as well. As I said, I've sort of headed into sports car world and doing more and more endurance racing and sports car stuff, and I think the Daytona race has actually made a bit of a comeback in the last 2 or 3 years. It's really picked up. The entries are up again, and I think it's definitely on my bucket list. As long as the weather's like it is at the moment, I'd quite happily come back to Florida anytime.
Yeah, it seems like this will be a good weekend for the race. I know they're calling for a slight chance of showers, but there's always a slight chance of showers in South Florida, so it should be okay.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening and wish you lots of luck this weekend.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Once again, that was Karin Trondok, from Formula E Mahindra Racing. And it should be an awesome weekend for him. I advise you to go to the Formula E website and vote for Karin Trondok for the fan boost. I'm sure he'd take full advantage of it, and he'd appreciate it. We've got a few minutes until our next guest is scheduled to call in, Jim Wright from Venturi Motorsports. So would you ever be interested in trying to compete in a fully electric powered car?
Yes, I think that would be fun and different, of course, but I think that would be a lot of fun.
That's what you should do, is pick up a Chevy Volt and take it out to Freda Speedway.
I would probably get laughed at.
You never know. You'd get laughed at as long as you're faster than everybody else, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and I guess that would save on race fuel.
There you go.
What about you? Do you ever drive an electric powered race car?
Possibly. I'll stick with driving the Toyota Prius every so often, though. That's close enough for me. I'm kind of curious to see how the how many people actually show up for the race there in Miami this weekend. I know they haven't been doing the biggest the best job, in my opinion, of promoting it down here. The only time that I was aware of the fact that the race was coming up was when the webmaster for Speedway Digest contacted me and said that they had approved me for credentials for the race and told me what weekend it was. So that's kind of the problem with a lot of major motorsports, though. They don't promote them as much as they used to. And it's more of a word-of-mouth thing than anything else.
Yeah. But you would think with, like, as many people and stuff using Facebook that, you know, they would at least try to maybe go through social media sites better, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's basically what they do. They have a lot of, they have the Twitter presence for the Miami Prix. They have the huge social media presence for Formula E itself, and they have all the websites, and that's the way that they're doing it. But like I said, I think that it's kind of bad that I don't think that any of the local news stations will even mention the fact that there's a race in Miami unless there's some sort of spectacular accident that happens to make the front page of the newspaper.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's literally on Miami streets, isn't it kind of hard to miss, kind of?
Pretty much, but you'd be surprised how many there's interesting drivers in South Florida who wouldn't know that there was a car ahead of them because they've got their head so far shoved into their cell phone that they don't even know there's other cars on the street. So a street being closed doesn't matter to them anyway.
Personally, if I came up on a street that was closed due to racing of all things, I would find a way to watch it.
Yeah. I'm sure that's kind of what they're hoping, too, because there are a ton of people living downtown Miami now with all the huge expansion of the condos in the early part of this century. And I think that's kind of what they're thinking in having the racing in downtown areas, bringing the people directly from the city who come down and see, hey, there's a race going on, and wander around and see what's going on there. And then they say, hey, it might be interesting to watch this next year or find out more about it. So it's kind of cool.
Are all of their races going to be street races?
Yep, all 10 races are street races. Their next one, I believe the next one's actually in Long Beach. And then they've racing all over the world. They've got the two races here in the United States, the one here in Miami, the one in Long Beach, California. And then they've got racing coming up in Moscow in a couple months. They've got a few other races in Europe.
Well, how do you think this series is going to do?
After the first four races, I think they're doing pretty well, and I think that this will be a good thing for the series if they have a successful race, and I'm pretty sure they will. And if they have a halfway decent turnout, then that'll be even better. I'm kind of interested to see how many people they have. How many people applied for media passes as well? Because as I said, the local coverage of auto racing, even for pretty much for anything that goes on in South Florida, is bad. They only had a few articles about the racing in Daytona. I think the only reason they had that is because they had a huge media week this year where they gave out the 10,000 hot passes for the Daytona 500. But the racing that they have at Palm Beach International hardly ever makes the news unless there's a problem. You never see anything about the Sebring, which Mr. Trontalk just mentioned a few minutes ago. They actually have an ad for the 12 Hours of Sebring that's being run on the billboard along I-95, which is really surprising to me. But you never hear anything about that either. And it's just sort of... It's not really a good thing. because there's a lot more to, if it's a good race, if the racing is well, if the people have a competitive race, then you don't hear about it. But if it's a race where there's a big accident or where there's an amazing explosion, that's the only time you'll hear about it on local media. And that's not the best thing for auto racing. It's definitely not the best thing for people, because if your only exposure to auto racing is when something bad happens, and you're not going to want to go to the races because you think, hey, there's going to be another big crash. Why don't we go there?
Yeah, I don't think racing gets enough credit, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And it should, too, because it's not especially for the fact that there's, going back to the relatively low cost again, it's only $25 for a full day of racing where you get there at 8 o'clock in the morning and until 5 o'clock at night you've got something going on the track the whole time. You've got a full autograph session with some of the most famous drivers in the history of the world there, people you'd never see, you never have a chance to get close to, and you've... And it's a fun thing to do. It might be a little bit warm this weekend, but that's just normal Florida thing. It's a lot better to be standing outside in 85 degree weather with a chance of rain than to be standing outside in 40 degree weather with snow still on the ground in places.
Yeah, that is true. I'm glad that the weather in Washington or even just Ephrata has gotten so much better. It's starting to feel like spring.
Here it's felt like spring since January. So. Aside from that little bit of chilly weather we had at the end of January and a little teeny bit in the middle of February, but it's been a hot start to the year. And when it's 85 degrees in the beginning of March, I don't have very good feelings for the middle of July and August when it's probably going to be 105 degrees outside. That'll be when air conditioning is a very good thing.
Yeah, I always pictured Florida as like a really hot state. But from the sounds of it, by talking to you, it's pretty warm. But because I always thought it was just like constant heat, I guess.
Mhm. Well, it's warm, and then it gets, especially in the winter, it's warm, and then it gets really, really cold. Your section of the country really cold, but still it gets down to the 30s for a few days and then it gets warm again. So Florida is temperamental in terms of weather.
Yeah. You don't really hear about not Florida itself, but like crime in Florida, I guess.
You don't want to hear about crime in Florida. Actually, it's a lot better than it used to be. And that'll be another one of the things that'll be interesting to see about downtown Miami. Because when they had the racing in downtown Miami in the past, downtown Miami was not a happy place. And it's getting better because the past few times I've been down there to visit for cruise ships and that sort of thing, the area isn't as bad as it used to be. And I'm not entirely sure the whole reason why the area is not as bad as it used to be. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact they built so many condos and they sort of forced the unfriendly part of the city out. They forced them away from the downtown area and that sort of thing. Some people might argue they forced them up to Fort Lauderdale, and that's why some parts of downtown Fort Lauderdale aren't quite as nice as they used to be. But it's better than it used to be. And Miami's a beautiful city. The whole area is amazing. The huge skyscrapers, the the arena right downtown, right on the water. Soon to have the soccer arena that's going to be springing up in that area. And it's undergoing a renaissance, and I think the racing downtown will definitely help that as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of reality TV shows that are in Miami.
Yeah, I'm not a big, huge reality TV show fan. I don't follow most of that. But you never know. I know that there are a lot of celebrities who tend to hang out in Miami as well. One of the restaurants that's attached to the American Airlines Arena is owned by Gloria and her husband Emilio Estefan. And so I'm sure that'll be hopping this weekend as well. I believe it's a Cuban restaurant. I'm pretty sure the name is Bongos or something like that. But there'll definitely be a lot of business around the downtown area that will pick up due to the racing thing. I think some of the people will appreciate it, and some of the people will be wondering, hey, why are all these people around, and why are they blocking our street? But that's the same with any major city when they've got major events like that. I wouldn't want to be taking a cruise tomorrow, though, because the traffic going down Biscayne Boulevard will be pretty much a standstill to get by there. It always is, but anybody who doesn't realize there's going to be a race going on this weekend and tries to go down and thinks, hey, we're going to cut down from towards Knight Street there and go down Biscayne Boulevard, and they realize, hey, the road's closed. Going down there on Saturday would be really exciting. Yeah, but why are these really, really fast race cars going the wrong way down the road?
So obviously there's quite a few NASCAR tracks, but how come NASCAR doesn't do like a city road street race?
I think a lot of it has to do with the safety things. They're the same stuff that Jeff Gordon and all that have been complaining about recently, because it's virtually impossible to put up a safer barrier around an entire street course. And all you've got is a big concrete wall on both sides of you.
True. But I'm sure, I bet there would be a way. I mean, it's NASCAR. I bet there would probably, if they really wanted, there'd probably be a way to slow the cars down a little bit, maybe.
Mhm. Yeah, I know that they've had the racing there in Mexico. NASCAR Mexico has had events down there on street circuits. That was where the racing in Canada on street circuits in NASCAR, and that's worked out pretty well. I'm sure if they wanted to, they could find a way, but it's all a matter of being interested in it. And now I'd like to introduce our final guest of the evening. Our final guest tonight is the Marketing and Sponsorship Director for Venturi Motorsports, Mr. Jim Wright. Mr. Wright has been with Venturi since they opened their doors and has a long background with Formula One racing. We'd now like to welcome him to the program. Hello, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Good evening.
First off, can you tell us a little bit about your background in motorsports?
Sure, yeah. I've been lucky enough to make my entire career in motorsports. I'm a lucky boy. I worked for 16 years in Formula One. 12 of those years were with Frank Williams between 1994 and 2006. And then I worked for Gerhard Berger when he bought the Toro Rosso team for 3 years. And then finally, I got involved in the Virgin Racing startup project in 2009-10. And that's when I ended Formula One at the end of 2011. And now I'm in Formula E.
How do you think the first season of a Formula E is going so far?
Well, I think it's delivering everything that we expected and more. you know, I remind myself we've only had four races, but the quality of the races has been very, very high, not only in terms of the actual racing we're seeing, but also the drivers, the quality of the venues, and everything, I think, is a very, very high level and looks very, very promising.
What track in the schedule do you feel that Venturi will perform the best at?
Well, I think we should be performing well at every race. We've led three of the four races, but if you look at the team's championship, we're right down at the bottom. And that's because in two races we've been crashed out, spectacularly in Beijing when Nico Prost crashed into us on the last corner of the last lap. And then we were taken out in Malaysia when we were in fifth position. And then we've led in both Punta del Este and in Buenos Aires, but made silly mistakes in the pit stop sequence and got drive-through penalties, which cost us dearly. So I think we're capable of leading and winning every race, but we need to eradicate the mistakes and actually, you know, achieve what we're capable of doing.
Can you give us a little insight into the changes that Venturi is planning for next year's car?
Well, the FIA regulations say that from season two, we can start to change certain parts of the car. So for season one, we've all got the same Spark chassis, the McLaren e-motor, the Williams battery, and the Hewlett gearbox. And from season two, what we can start to change is the e-motor and also the inverter and the gearbox, so the powertrain, in other words. And this is a conscious decision by Formula E and FIA not to get involved in aerodynamics and chassis and suspension design. We've got Formula One and other categories doing that very, very well. So Formula E is going to concentrate only on powertrain and the energy source for battery. So next year, a Venturi e-motor, inverter and gearbox will be designed and built. And that's where we're very confident that we can use some of our expertise that we've run in other programs, where we have the FIA world records or land speed records for electric vehicles. And we can start to apply some of that know-how and technology and expertise to our Formula E contender.
Do you think that Formula E will be the model for the future of auto racing?
Well, that's a wide sweeping statement because, you know, we've got Formula One, which is ultra successful. We have NASCAR, which is ultra successful. There are many, many different forms of motorsport which contribute to the overall makeup of the sport that we all love. And I think what Formula E does is add a new dimension. And, you know, we are a series for electric cars, and I think we're heading to be a world championship. And I think if we can achieve a world championship for electric motorsport, where all the development is concentrated on powertrain and energy sources to help the automobile industry to develop electric vehicles quicker, then I think we're playing a role in the overall ecosystem of motorsport. And I think that's what our aspirations are. But, every part of motorsport has to play its role in making motorsport current and entertaining and affordable. And I think Formula E can certainly contribute to that overall goal.
I know that all the Formula E races are basically a one-day event. Do you think that that's a good way of keeping the cost down and making it more convenient for the people?
Well, it certainly keeps you on your toes. My background, as I said, is Formula One, where you have three-day events. And to go to a one-day event where everything is condensed into a very, very tight, compact program is a real challenge. It's a challenge for the engineers and for the drivers. And it's a challenge from my side, the marketing side as well. But I like it. I personally think it's a well-known fact that people's attention spans are getting shorter because we have far more choice. We have far more things we want to look at and do. So I think the timing is right to go to a one-day format. And with the city centre races that we want, it's imperative we have that format so that cities like Miami are not too disrupted. And I personally am a fan of it. I like it. I think it's workable. And so far, it hasn't caused any problems.
I'd now like to turn the floor over to Michael Mullally, my co-host, who has a couple of questions for you as well, sir.
Sure.
In your opinion, what is the most critical part of Formula E racing?
I think it's battery management. We have a finite amount of energy which we're able to use in a race, and when that's used up, that's it, you're out. So to manage that energy with the different circuit configuration, different ambient temperatures, is a real challenge. And what's happening is that when we come to a circuit like Miami, where you have some long straights, you have a fairly high ambient temperature, that puts real demands on that battery management. And battery management is mostly about using that energy to go as fast as you possibly can for as long as you possibly can. And that's a real skill, and it's a skill which is for engineers and also for the drivers, because the drivers contribute to that with the way they drive the cars and regenerate energy.
Do you think that at some point they will eventually find a way to make the Formula E races longer?
Yes, I think the immediate target is to switch from two cars to one car, because we know that it's less than perfect needing two cars to do the race. So within 5 years, the target is to switch back from two cars to one car. And that means that we will have had a 50% improvement in energy, which is remarkable in such a short space of time. So that's the first target. And then the second target will be, as you say, to have longer races. But bear in mind what I said a few minutes ago. I think that the days of people sitting down to watch a two-hour Formula One race, or dare I say it, a three-and-a-half-hour NASCAR race, the attention span of people these days and the busy lifestyles we all lead, I'm not sure that we want to get to that point. So I think shorter races, punchier races with far more action and entertainment is really what people want these days.
In your opinion, what are some of the pros to Formula E racing?
I think you've got to look at what we're trying to achieve. And what we're trying to achieve is to make electric vehicles cool, interesting, sexy, dynamic. And we're trying to do that in urban street settings. And then the next goal is to say, okay, if we're achieving that, how can we then use Formula E to accelerate the learning of auto manufacturers in e-motors, inverters, and batteries? And I think time will prove that Formula E can play a role in that, as motorsport has always played a role in developing new technology for eventual road car applications. The third point is, and I always use my 13-year-old son as a reference here, in all the years I was in Formula One, he showed no interest in Formula One at all. Formula E, he loves, because it's interactive. He can vote for his favorite driver. He can consume it, not just through television, but through his mobile device. And he thinks it's cool, interesting, exciting. And for a 13-year-old to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go and watch a film on Westminster Bridge in London, that proved to me that he likes it and we're getting to that generation. So I think to answer your question, what can Formula E achieve? Those are the three things we're looking to achieve. Make it cool, create a nice image for electric vehicles, get the automobile industry using Formula E to advance its technologies quicker, and then to make Formula E the reference point for the next generation of car buyers, so that my son Jamie, when he comes to buy his first car, he's going to say, it must be an electric vehicle. And if we can achieve that, then we'll have done everything we set out to do.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening. and wish your team great luck in Miami this weekend.
That's my pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Good night. Once again, that was Jim Wright of Venturi Motorsports. We'd like to thank him very much again for coming on the program. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. I'm going to have full coverage of the Formula E event. I've had a few stories leading up to it. I've got full coverage coming up this weekend. And I hope that you take advantage of reading over that. I also invite you to go to the Formula E website to take part in the Fan Boost and to follow all the action this weekend on Fox Sports. Thank you for listening. And I look forward to seeing you again in the Thunderdome in 2 weeks, when we once again welcome Miss Nitro Jam to the program to discuss the latest in drag racing news. Good night, and I'll talk to you later.